Chapter 18, Day 268. Lucerna AB, 0730. A clear day over the desert. Fine, bright, light conditions. Slight crosswind. He opened the throttle, and the big, brutal, Imperial plane climbed effortlessly. Ironic, Kaminsky thought. Conditions had been just like this that day he'd... the last time he'd flown.
Make your track 416, the Vox said. Copy that lead, Kaminsky replied, and keep an eye on your orspecs. The dial top right of the screen plate adjusts gain if you need better resolution on a merged return. Got that, thank you. Kaminsky pushed the stick over gently, depressing the rudder bar. Good response. The Thunderbolt was everything he'd imagined it would be. Contacts, 10 o'clock, the Vox suddenly chimed. Kaminsky glanced round, saw the flash on the orspecs. Nothing in visual. No, there it was. A glint of sunlight off metal, hard and high up. He started to climb again. The bat came down sharply, screwing out of its dive. He thought he'd paced the intercept well, but the hostile had gone under him. Break! Break, or he'll have you!
Trying,
Kaminsky responded.
He made a violent left-hand roll. It was right on his tail now. How the hell had it managed that?
Break! Break!
Tone warning. He was locked hard.
Holy throne,
he cursed, and tried one last twist. The bat began to fire. Kaminsky's thunderbolt exploded. The stick went dead. So did the sky. Blanchard slid back the hood.
Bad luck, he said. I was stupid, Kaminsky said. It was a basic mistake. You're still getting used to the bird, thinking too much about the controls and how they operate. It's natural. Once the mechanics become so familiar you don't have to think about them, your mind will be freed up.
Kaminsky nodded.
Besides, said Blanchard, I know you don't have much experience of vector thrust aircraft. Vectoring gives us all sorts of tricks we can play in the air. The bat got you just then because it whiffed out under you. And if you'd done the same, you'd probably have evaded.
I know, said Kaminsky, but it's difficult not to think in terms of forward motion. Sidestepping, stopping, that sort of thing doesn't seem natural.
It needn't be that dramatic. Just a little touch will put a slight non-ballistic behavior into your performance.
Blanchard glanced at his chronometer.
You've been in the simulator rig for 2 hours. We can take a break if you like. Get some breakfast into you.
How many times have I died in those 2 hours? Kaminsky asked.
6.
Blanchard grinned.
Let's try it again.
Lucerna AB, 0743. Commander? Commander Eads? Jagdeer ran to catch up with the man. They were crossing a busy gantry walkway deep in the heart of the base. Tannoy announcements kept booming out, and personnel jostled and hurried past. Commander Eads, Jagdeer said. The man turned, his head cocked.
Who's calling my name?
She'd been told he was blind. Look for the blind officer, several people had said.
My apologies, sir. I'm Commander Jagdeer, Fantine 20.
Are you indeed?
And why were you after me? I was hoping to talk to you, sir. Get some advice.
About what?
Pilots. I'm looking for pilots to replace losses in my flight.
Then surely you should be talking to Navy Reserve, he said.
I started there. Navy Reserve has no one airworthy. The handful of able pilots who have come in with the evac have already been assigned to Navy flights, so I asked the Munitorum for lists of airworthy Commonwealth pilots here on Lucerna.
Eads chuckled.
You can't do that. Navy doesn't take pilots from the PDF.
Because the Navy believes it is an elite service and chooses to draw only on its own. I know. That's what the Munitorum officer told me, Jagdeer said. The thing is, the Fantine 20 isn't Navy. It's Imperial Guard. An aberration, but one that permits me the scope to recruit from the PDF if I choose.
Eads shook his head, amused.
The Navy won't like that.
The Navy can lump it. The precedent is already well established, thanks to a priest who... Look, I won't bore you with the story. The point is, I have the list of Commonwealth flyers.
Jagdeer patted a fat folder under her arm.
I was told you were the man to ask about recommendations.
Can we walk and talk?
Eads asked. I'm due on shift at operations at 8.
Of course.
They moved away off the gantry and along an equally busy rock-cut corridor. Jagdeer noticed how even the most hurried-looking personnel they met respectfully stood aside to let Eads pass.
You know the men. You had command at Theta North.
Before the Navy arrived. I'm afraid I can't read your lists. I left my code reader behind in the haste to evacuate. I'm lost without it.
I could read out the lists to you, sir.
As I said, my shift starts at 8. Maybe later, Commander.
With respect, sir, time is very short. Is there no one you can think of?
The main hatch into Lucerna operations lay ahead of them.
Well, there is one. Good pilot.
I know he's here because he came in with me, and I know for a fact he's done simulation time orienting on your machines. That's a good start. His name's Sculter, Franz Sculter. I recommend him highly. He works operations too, but he's not on this shift. Someone can track him down for you. Thank you, sir. Can I come and find you later? Run through the lists?
Of course.
They'd reached the doorway. Jagdeer could hear the frantic chatter of the busy operations floor beyond the hatch. Juniors ran in and out with data slates and chart reports. A young man was standing by the hatch. He seemed to be waiting for Eads. He looked somehow familiar to Jagdeer.
Good morning, flight, he said to Commander Eads.
Call that a salute, Eads replied. Ready to go, Darrow?
Yes, sir.
I'll expect you later then, Commander, Eads said to Jagdeer, then allowed his junior to lead him away into the hustle of the operations deck.
Lucerna AB, 0830. They stood on an observation platform high amongst the island cliffs. It was a fine, clear morning, though the wind was strong and tugged at their hair. 100 meters below them, the sea crashed in against the foot of the pink crags.
Almost romantic, said Becca. The sea and the islands. My family took me on holiday to the Midwinters when I was young. Me and Ido. We stayed on Salthaven. There are beaches there. Ido loved it. That was before the war really took hold, obviously. A time when holidays were something that people did. One day I'll take you on a holiday. I promise.
She smiled at Viltry.
Don't make promises you can't keep. No, really, I mean it. All I've got to do is defeat the enemy, and we can have all the holidays we want.
She shook her head, amused.
So, you say they've found you a job, he said. In munitions prep.
The senior who assigned me seemed impressed by my skills. All those long night shifts at the manufactory weren't a waste.
That's good. I start this afternoon. You haven't said anything about the way I look,
Viltry said.
And try not to think about it. It's difficult because you're very handsome in that new flight suit, all shaved and groomed.
You found your squadron, haven't you?
No, said Viltry. But I found a Fantine unit here that needed a pilot. Fighters, would you believe? That'll take some relearning. It's called the Fantine 20, Umbra flight.
He showed her the insignia pins and badges on his new flight coat.
Very nice, she said,
and looked away at the sea.
I have to fly, Beck. It's what I do. They need every pilot they can get right now. I would be failing the throne if I didn't do this.
I know.
And maybe when the war's done here, I can apply to leave the service and stay here with you.
Becca Mayer smiled.
The war is never done, Oscar. If it finishes here, a fine pilot like you will be needed somewhere else. They won't let you leave. You're a resource. They'll keep you flying until the enemy finally claims you. Remember what I said about promises you couldn't keep?
I'm sorry,
he mumbled.
It's all right. Really.
We've had some time.
It's been brief, but very sweet.
I thought I'd lost you once, and the Emperor allowed you to come back. I couldn't go through that again. You fly. I'll be proud of you. That's all that needs to be said.
The wind had picked up again. She shivered.
That blasted old coat of yours, he snapped.
He bent over his kit bag and pulled out his ragged Halo flight jacket.
Take this. It's a bit battered and torn, I'm afraid, but it's got a fleece lining.
He put it over her shoulders, then pulled her close.
Thanks,
she said, pressing against his side. She rested her head on his chest.
You're right,
he said, gazing at the view.
It is almost romantic.
There was a boom, like the end of the world, and 8 thunderbolts slammed up into the air from a hangar in the cliff beneath them. The throaty roar of the formation's afterburners shook their diaphragms. As the planes climbed away, they both laughed.
Until something like that happens, Viltry said.
She kissed his cheek.
To hell with them. We can make our own romance. You go and fly, Oscar. I've told the Emperor to protect you.
Over the Midwinters, 1410. Umbra flight was barely up when they spotted the air battle. To the west, the pale green sky was bright with flashes and tinged with smoke. And it wasn't the only battle. Wings from Onstad were coming in on a major fight to the east, and everything Viper Atoll had was lofting against a 1,000-bomber wave, heading out across the Sea of Ezra towards Limbus. Umbra, rise to 4,000, Jagdeer ordered. She had 4 machines with her, Markwell, Van Tull, Cordial, and Viltry. Viltry's first flight. She had sensed his nerves as he'd run to his bird. Umbra flight had already been up twice that day. A full flight sortie at 0900 hours that had lasted 2 hours and seen them turn back a 90-plane bomber formation with the help of 3 lightning wings out of Tarmuda MAB. 3 kills, Ranfrey, Delruth, and Jagdia. Then Delruth, Ranfrey, and Zemek had gone up just before noon with Blanchet as lead and had a short but ferocious duel with the top cover of a Hell Talon formation. Zemek and Blanchet had scored kills, but they'd been grateful to see the 56th coming in to help break the wave up. All 4 were now on refit turnaround, and Blanchet was spending time coaching Kaminsky. Blanchet was patient, but he seemed to have doubts about Kaminsky's talent.
"He's getting the basic layout of the bolt, but he refuses to relax," Blanchet had told her. "Maybe he's not the best choice."
"Stick with it," Jagdia had ordered. They could see the hostiles now. 60 tormentors, pounding across the sea towards the northern affiliation, laden with bombs. The 51st had already engaged.
"Any sign of escort?" Jagdia voxed.
"Nothing on the scope," replied Cordial. "But you've got to assume."
"Start assuming," she said.
There was also no sign of the promised support for them from Longstrand. Jagdia keyed the vox.
"Lucerna Operations, this is Umbra Leader. Confirm other units aloft."
A buzzing crackle. "Operations, Umbra Lead. Kodiak flight and Orbis flight show as launched. East of you, 70 kilometers, closing low. 20 machines.
Thank you, Operations. We have visual on the enemy. Closing to intercept."
Jagdia was reassured to hear that the Fantine wing, commanded by her friend Willem Hayes, was inbound. She switched on her gun sight and toggled her las cannons to active.
"Guns live, Umbra. Come back."
"Umbra 8, copy."
That was Markwell.
"Umbra 3, 4A,
and Van Tull.
"Umbra 11, check and ready."
Cordial. A pause.
"Umbra 4, come back."
Jagdia voxed.
"Umbra 4, do you copy?"
"Viltry."
"Damn it, Viltry." "Copy, you lead. This is Umbra 4. Sorry, I just tried to switch on my gun sight and appear to have turned on the demister and the cockpit light instead."
"Viltry?"
"Just kidding, lead. Guns live, on your command."
Jagdia smiled.
"Operations, show Umbra as attacking. Umbra flight, attack, attack, attack."
Viltry was nothing like as confident as he sounded. As he nursed the throttle, following Jagdia's shallow dive, he saw the lumbering packs of tormentors filling the sky ahead. The slow, medium bombers were already firing from their turret mounts, chattering out streaks of heavy fire. Viltry had flown bolts before, but this seemed strange after so many tours in Marauders. It wasn't the differences in cockpit layout or the considerably greater agility. It was the fact that he was alone again. One man, one machine. No trained crew manning other stations. So focused, so very concentrated. It was all down to him. Viltry decided he'd better enjoy it. The Thunderbolt certainly felt like a tiny, speeding dart compared to G for Greta. They sliced down into the enemy lines. He was reminded that air tactics were now utterly different, too. Ordinarily, he'd have been the one flying the heavy plane in formation, fighting off the interceptors, not the other way round. Jagdia and Van Tull went over the formation, blitzing fire. Viltry followed them, seeing Markwell and Cordial go under. Immediately, 3 enemy machines started to drop out of line, making thick smoke. One suddenly pitched down violently. Umbra came up and around for the second pass.
"Must do better,"
Viltry said to himself. Cordial had the lead on the turn and prosecuted the attack. His las cannons flashed white. One of the tormentors wavered for a moment, then blew up in a huge cloud of flames as its payload ignited. Burning debris rained down. The tormentors in immediate formation wallowed away in the shock burst. 2 collided and the destroyed planes sheared apart. Viltry saw scrap metal and bodies falling. He had a decent lineup. The nearest tormentor was pumping streams of tracer his way, but the shot stream was dropping low. He smiled as he got a clean lock ping and started firing. The Thunderbolt tugged hard, its airframe pulsing as it discharged its cannons. Bree had warned him it would do that. He compensated and turned high.
"Umbra 4, this is lead. Nice kill."
"I didn't even see it," he said. "Did I get it?"
"Yes, 4.
He rolled back, exhilarated by the light performance of the Thunderbolt, and pounced on another tormentor. Its turrets tried to pin him. He knew from bitter experience how a fighter could ride up underneath a straight-flying bomber. It was all a matter of judging the cones of fire. There was always a sweet spot. He found it. Viltry fired, lancing dazzling bars of las energy from his nose cone. The belly of the tormentor burst, and then it started to dive, ablaze, leaving a curl of brown smoke in the air behind it.
Scratch two, he voxed. Think I'm getting the hang of it, Bree.
Markwell banked, quietly furious. He'd missed his targets on both passes, and this man, Viltry, had just come along, and in the space of 2 minutes, he'd equaled Markwell's career score. The bastard. It was insufferable. The upstart was even on first-name terms with Jagdia. Who the hell did he think he was? 9-9 shuddered as bolter rounds kissed its flank. Markwell banked out. Part of the formation went by under him, and he dropped back onto the lead pair. He was too high. The tail guns nailed him hard, cracking his canopy and ripped out part of his cowling. He dropped out of the line of fire. How the devil did Viltry know where to place himself? He climbed again, hammered at by gunfire from the enemy pack. He snuggled in, lining up on a bomber, but before he could deploy the trigger, the thing exploded in a giant wash of smoke. Van Tull had nailed it. "Oh, give me a break!" Markwell exclaimed. "Someone give me a frigging break!" The 51st, tanks spent, had pulled off. Now Kodiak and Orbis flights powered in and entered the engagement. Kodiak, a flight from the 789th Navy, were flying dark green bolts. Orbis were dressed in Fantine grey with blue trim.
"Hello, Orbis, hello, Orbis," Jagdia voxed. "Nice to see you. Umbra lead, this is Hayes. Any left?" "Plenty, take your pick, Orbis leader."
Hayes turned his thunderbolt long and peppered a tormentor that went down in flames at once. Two of his wingmen scored, and Kodiak flight ripped another three hostiles out of the sky.
"All wings, break left, now," Kodiak leader voxed. "Fighters coming in."
Hellraisers stooped out of the high clouds, hammering down at full thrust. They were firing.
"Break wide," Jagdia ordered.
Viltry felt his machine buck as shots scorched by. He started to climb steeply. Markwell started to dive. The enemy fighters slammed through their scatter. One of the Kodiak planes broke apart under fire. Another sank on a wide turn towards the sea. The razors were crimson and black, except for their leader, who was pearl white. Lucerna AB, 1430.
"Switch, and say it again."
"Switch."
"Okay, sir,"
called Rackley.
"Now give the command, fire."
"Fire,"
said Kaminsky.
"Again."
"Fire."
Rackley stood up, checking his tech plate, and looked down at Kaminsky in the cockpit.
"Right, the system now knows your voice. The commands are logged."
Rackley leaned in across the cockpit well and pointed to a brass switch on the panel beside the throttle.
"That's your arming toggle. Throw it, guns alive. After that, it's all voice. You say, fire, and the system will fire a burst from whatever selected. Default is LAS. You say, switch, and it auto-toggles to the quads or back. Is that clear?"
"Yes, thank you," Kaminsky nodded. "And if I want continuous fire?"
"Just keep saying fire, sir."
Kaminsky pulled himself up out of the cockpit.
"Thanks, Mr. Rackley. You've done a fine job."
The fitter seemed distracted.
"What's up?"
asked Kaminsky. Rackley jumped down off the wing plate.
"The boys are monitoring the Vox, sir. It sounds like Umbra's in trouble."
Kaminsky followed the fitter across to a clutch of crewmen around the Vox set. Blanchard was tuning the dial. Ranfrey, Zemek, and Del Ruth were crowded around amongst the techs. At least Kaminsky was pretty sure that's who they were. He'd only just been told the other pilots' names.
"What's going on?"
he asked Zemek. The young man was playing with a chain of some lucky charms.
"Jag's gone into a tormentor formation," Zemek said. "And now they've got bats. Bad bats. The killer's there."
"The killer?" Kaminsky asked.
"The pearl white bastard," said Zemek.
Over the Midwinters, 1433. Viltry screamed his bolt round. The fighter pack was all over them. He tried to twist out. Jagdia and one of the Orbis birds swept in under him, crosswise, gunning. He saw a Kodiak explode in mid-air, stung by a red bat. He got a brief warning ping and rolled. A black razor was trying to tag him. Viltry swept down and, ignoring the turret ordnance whipping up at him, plunged in amongst the tormentor formation. The razor slowed, unwilling to risk hitting one of the bombers it was supposed to be protecting. Pleased with his ruse, Viltry throttled hard and came back up through the formation, this time with his guns alight. Firing impaired his climb rate, but it was worth it. As he came up diagonally under a tormentor, he hit it two or three times. Its engines began to gush blue vapor. Rising clear, Viltry could no longer spot the black bat. But there was the pearl-white razor, the leader of the enemy pack. It came around about 500 meters starboard of him, moving a lot faster than Viltry's machine, and dipped low. Another Thunderbolt, Orbis 6, was ascending past it.
Orbis 6, watch yourself,
Viltry called. The pearl-white razor executed a perfect whiff correction, a deft little simultaneous climb and slide, and spat fire at Orbis 6. Hit, the Thunderbolt folded, spraying out burning fuel. The lead razor was already climbing out, hunting for another target. Viltry started to go after it, but suddenly found he had his hands full, evading hard, as the black bat reappeared. Jagdeer and Cordial banked together and began chasing a red bat down towards the formation. What had been clean, bright air was now thick with exhaust trails, vapor, bars of smoke, and weapons discharge residue. Nevertheless, she could see the white bat. The red razor they were after was beginning to outrun them. She gave up on it and banked out, searching for the white bat again in the chaos of the rolling dogfight. A black razor chopped across her, head to head, and they traded shots. She checked her fuel. Low. The demands of the brawl had really emptied the tanks. Umbra flight, fuel status, Cordial responded, then Viltry, and finally Markwell. All of them were virtually running on empty, like her. Lead instructs flight, disengage and turn for home.
Umbra 4, copy.
Umbra 11, yes, ma'am. Markwell. Umbra 8, respond. Markwell had just spotted the white hostile 2 and recognized it at once. Most definitely the one that had nearly killed him on his second sortie, the bat that had claimed the Apostle.
Umbra 8!
One moment, lead. He turned towards the bat, but immediately had to crank away because he had inadvertently run into the range of a pair of cruising tormentors. Markwell pushed 99's throttle, dropped the nose, and looped in under the bomber string, taking a futile pot shot at the now ascending white razor. Another bat started firing at him as it crossed his 2, and Markwell banked, barely avoiding a tormentor that was dropping, engines burning.
Umbra 8, break off now!
Jagdeer sounded mad. Markwell heard a persistent warning chime. Fuel limit reached.
Copy that, leader, I'm coming!
He took one look back and saw to his dismay that the white bat had lined up on Orbis leader.
Orbis lead, break! Break wild!
Markwell yelled. Orbis leader turned to the right. Cannon fire from the white bat chewed his bolt into pieces. The debris flew out on a spear of flame for almost half a kilometer. Markwell climbed out of the dogfight, chasing the other 3 Umbra birds.
Did you see? He voxed. Did you see? That damned white razor! He got Orbis leader!
I saw, Jagdeer replied. She felt nothing except numb and sore from the physical extremes of the engagement. She knew the misery would hit her later. Hayes had been her friend since flight school. Right now, only one thing stuck in her mind. In the turmoil of the last part of the clash, she'd finally remembered why she'd recognized Eads Jr. Lucerna AB, 15:10. The noise of the jets died away. As Jagdeer and her wingmen dismounted, the fitter teams and the other flight pilots applauded. Jagdeer knew they were saluting a hell of a fight, a clutch of good kills, and the fact that all 4 were back alive. They were also showing support for Viltry on his successful debut. But it felt wrong. Not just because of Hayes. How many Imperial planes had she seen go down in that one brawl? Men were dying at a hell of a rate. Good work, she said to Cordial, who had sat down on the deck to unlace his boots and massage circulation back into his feet. Exposure to multiple negative G events often left a pilot with pins and needles, or worse.
Thanks, Commander, he said.
Viltry was removing his helmet. He looked pale, shaken, but there was a grin on his face.
Enjoy that? She asked.
Of course not.
You did well, Viltry. Like you've been on Thunderbolts for years.
He smoothed his sweat-flattened hair.
I must admit it was fun cutting loose in something so agile. You forget how heavy marauders are.
Markwell was just climbing down from 99.
Nice going, Markwell, she said. You kept your head?
She dropped her voice so only he could hear her.
Don't ever ignore a direct instruction again, pilot. I called you out because it was time to go. That happens, you obey without question. Are we clear on that?
He looked at the deck. Yes, Commander. She walked away.
Rearm and refuel, please,
she shouted to the fitter crews, knowing they were already on it. A tall man in a Commonwealth uniform was waiting for her with Blanchard.
Major Franz Skelter,
Blanchard said, by way of introduction. Jagdeer shook Skelter's hand and looked him up and down. Skelter had a slightly stunned expression.
I take it you've explained the basics to Major Skelter, Mill?
I took the liberty of spoiling your surprise, Commander.
Jagdeer looked at Skelter. Well, Major, are you interested in taking a place in my flight? Commander Eads has given you his personal recommendation.
Skelter opened his mouth, but couldn't find any words immediately. He nodded, and then said,
I would be honored, Commander Jagdeer. I have been longing to get the chance to fly for my home world again.
That's agreed, then. Good. Your designation will be Umbra 7. Mill, if you're busy with Kaminsky, find someone like Del Ruth or Cordial to get Mr. Skelter orientated, kitted up, and checked out on a simulator.
Yes, mademoiselle, said Blanchard. You off somewhere?
I won't be long, said Jagdeer.
Markwell stood by his bird for a while, stripping off his jacket and gloves, not wanting to mix with the others.
Everything all right, sir?
Asked Rackley. Fine, he replied. He was hardly going to tell his fitter that he was still smarting from the dressing down Jagdeer had given him. At least she'd had the decency not to do it in front of the others. He wandered across the hangar space, through the teams of working fitters, skirting a power lifter as it offered up munitions drums, stopping to let an electric Bowser trundle past. Kaminsky was seated on a jerry can beside his Thunderbolt, carefully studying a data slate of specifications and procedures.
Hi, said Markwell.
The shockingly scarred face tilted up at him.
Hello. Markwell, right?
Yeah. So, you got your wish then?
I beg your pardon,
Kaminsky replied.
That night, in Zara's? You said you'd give anything to be like me? To fly again?
Ah, I did, didn't I?
Markwell nodded. I can't quite remember if it was before or after you called me a bastard and a waste of space and suggested I shot myself to make the sector a better place.
Damn,
said Kaminsky. He put the slate down carefully, but still did not get to his feet.
I was kind of hoping you'd forgotten about that. Yes, I got my wish, Markwell. And what about you? Fallen off any bar stools recently?
Markwell coloured. No, he said. Kaminsky picked up the slate and started to read it again.
Then it sounds like things are working out for both of us, he said.
Lucerna AB, 1601. Eads had quarters in the lower levels of the base. The evacuation influx had put huge pressure on accommodation. The rock-cut passages down here smelled damp, and the glow-globe lighting was poor. Some of the rooms she saw were storage bays, and she was sure the quarters she passed had also been storage bays until recently. She found Eads's room and knocked on the metal hatch. After a moment, it opened and Darrow peered out.
Commander Jagdeer, I've come to see Eads.
Yes, mademoiselle, he's expecting you. Darrow opened the door and let her in. The room was small and bare. Litter had been swept into one corner. There was a camp table and two chairs, an unmade cot, and a bottle of Amasek with a dirty glass. The one concession to comfort was an old, tatty armchair. Eads was sitting in it, apparently asleep.
I can come back, Jagdeer whispered.
I'm awake, Jagdeer, just resting my thoughts. It was a long and demanding shift.
Darrow collected up a stack of data slates and paper files from the table.
I was just finishing the shift reports, he told Jagdeer. I'll get out of your way. No, stay, she said.
He paused and put the paperwork back down.
Excuse the drabness, said Eads. I'm told it's drab. I can't help it. I came out of theater with just the clothes I was standing up in. Take a seat, and let's get down to business.
Jagdeer sat down and put the folder she was carrying on the table.
I saw the white bat today, she said.
Did you? Said Eads. That devil's still out there, then.
It reminded me of the notice of report that had been circulated at the time of the Leader incident.
This report, she said, tapping the folder.
It contains a written account of a brawl with the bat. Very useful, very cautionary. It's been required reading for the Navy wings. You wrote it, didn't you, Darrow?
I did, Commander, the young man replied.
The report also contained your commanding officer's account. I forget his name.
Major Heckle, Darrow said.
Major Heckle.
Not confined by modesty, as you were in your part of the file, he describes the most extraordinary piece of flying.
Heckle was not exaggerating, said Eads quietly. He said it was one of the most gifted displays of natural ability he'd ever seen.
So it seems, said Jagdeer, outrunning an expert killer, probably an echelon commander, a pilot at the height of his powers.
What's more, doing it in a totally outclassed machine that lacked the speed, power, and vector abilities of the enemy's bat. What puzzles me is this, Commander Eads. When I came to you asking for recommendations, you chose to ignore the young pilot serving with you on a daily basis. Eads was silent. Commander, Darrow said softly,
may I ask, recommendations for what?
My wing is short a frontline pilot, Darrow.
You'd consider me, he said, astonished.
I understand you've been clocking simulator time on Thunderbolts, Jagdeer said.
I have, said Darrow. 60 hours. Who told you?
Major Sculter. So where does this leave us? Eads sat forward, his hands on his knees.
Enric's not the one you're looking for, Commander, he said.
Why not? Darrow asked sharply.
I'm sorry, sir,
he added, adjusting his tone.
Why not, sir?
Eads addressed his answer to Jagdeer.
He's barely a cadet, Jagdeer. His combat hours are minimal. Oh, he's got talent. But that one dogfight, that was luck. He got very lucky indeed. If you send him into combat now, he will die. He's not ready. My recommendation would be an act of murder.
Darrow rose to his feet.
I disagree, sir.
It's not up to you, Enric, Eads said.
Isn't it? Jagdeer asked.
How will I ever be ready if I don't get the experience?
Darrow said.
This is not the time, said Eads.
Oh, I think there's no time like it, said Jagdeer. Enothis needs all her pilots for this war, Commander Eads. If men like Darrow don't try, then there may not be a future available for other chances.
I won't have his blood on my conscience, said Eads emphatically. I will not recommend him.
Jagdeer looked at Darrow. I think it's up to an individual wing leader to decide if she needs a man to be recommended before she takes him. Your objection is noted, Commander, and your loyalty in trying to protect him is admirable. Cadet Darrow, I'm offering you that place. Will you take it?
Yes, Commander.
Gladly. Darrow looked over at Eads.
I'm sorry, sir.
Jagdeer got to her feet and collected her folder. You'll have to report immediately, Darrow. You can come with me now. They walked to the hatch. In the doorway, Darrow turned and saluted crisply.
Call that a salute, Eads said.
Yes, sir.
Eads rose to his feet stiffly and then saluted back.
That's a salute, he said, and sat down again. Good luck, son. Prove me wrong.
Darrow followed Jagdeer down the passageways to one of the main staircases. They clattered up the stone steps, side by side.
You all right?
She asked him.
Yes, mademoiselle. I'm very fond of the commander. It's sad to see him upset like that.
You know he was only trying to protect you, don't you? Jagdeer said.
Yes, but I think there was something more, said Darrow. These last few weeks, he's lost everything. His command, many of his men and his friends, then the base itself, and all his possessions with it. I think my company was the last thing he had to hold on to.
This is war, said Jagdeer. War calls for sacrifices.